Hi, my name is Richard. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Richard.
My sobriety date's May 1st, 2014. So I got a little over 5 years. I've got a sponsor. And I used to have a bunch of sponsees. Now I'm down to one. So what it was like. I grew up uncomfortable, and I didn't realize how common that was. I grew up in punk rock, so that was, I thought that was normal for kind of kids of that generation. But it turns out a lot of us are uncomfortable. My whole life I felt uncomfortable. My dad was a pipeliner, so we moved around. We followed the pipelines. So my background also, we were always moving around. So I never had long-term friends. I never really had roots, it seemed like. And I was a little mentally unstable too. So I kind of grew up in this cocoon. And so I wasn't looking for alcohol, but at an early age I tried glue, I tried gas. I tried a lot of this stuff like to get out of myself. I got into exercise when I was 13 or 14. I did that just absolutely fanatically. I did everything like to an excess, trying to get out of myself. I'd read 8 hours a day. I would watch TV 8 hours. Everything I did, I was kind of looking for an out. And then I found it at about 15. I drank with the swim team at a drive-in. And it was awesome. And it was game on. It was the first time I felt free. I've heard people that say they don't remember their first drink, but I remember my first drinks. Like, it was just kind of life-changing. Because I do everything to an excess, I couldn't drink like a normal person. I could not drink at all, actually. I overshot the mark. So I, like a good alcoholic, I got into speed. So I did. So I did speed for like the next 2 years. And the consequences were I got kicked out of my house at 16. And my life just went to shit really, really fast. I got into punk rock at the same time, and it was a great combination when I was a kid. I did that till about 89. I went to my first AA meeting at 17, because I went to live with my best friend. His parents adopted me, and his brother's friend took me to my first AA meeting at 17. 16, I knew I had issues. 17, I finally hit the rooms once. I went in, it's a bunch of old guys talking about God. I got in an argument with him after the meeting, which I did actually in this term of sobriety too. Argued with my first sponsor all the time, and he said, "If you don't believe in God, you can't get sober. You can't be an AA." So, my second meeting was when I was 43, mm-hmm. And I spent that whole rest of the time trying to learn how to drink. I moved up here in '89. Haven't done hard drugs since '89, but I couldn't figure out how to drink. I go on and off, and What worked for me is I started traveling with bands, and I had a really unstable life. That's how I grew up. And I was able to, that was enough of a distraction for a lot of years. I could drink a little bit. I'd go with a band, I'd drink, and I'd be sober at home, or vice versa, or I'd be sober on the road and drink at home. I think I did that twice. But I did that for a long time, and that actually worked. I've always been a little mentally ill. I'm mostly depression, and it was enough forward movement to get me out of my depression. When you're going to the next city, you can't sit down and not move. You're always forced to move. And that, what I realize now is that kind of allowed me to be a functional alcoholic. And even when I wasn't drinking, there were times I didn't drink. I was still an alcoholic in hindsight. I quit touring, and that's when I kind of kicked off my drinking. And I remember, too, just like I remember my first drink, I did my last tour, and I was literally felt poisoned from drinking. And I remember that first day, I was kind of excited because my pattern was I came home, I would quit drinking. And that whole time, that last tour, I thought I was going to quit drinking for a little while, dry out. And I remember I went to the store, and I bought beer. And it was game on for another 15 years. And I started a business, and I had a pretty good life. But that business allowed me to drink on my own. And I learned how to, I've gone through 4 trades. I've learned how to drink in all of them, except for my last one. Mm-hmm. And at the very end of that, my wife's family kept dying, because I was married for 17 years. And every time she would leave town the last couple of years, I'd be alone in the house. So a good example is I would overeat in the beginning. The second to last time she left, I stayed in bed and drank the whole time. And that's what my life looked like at the end. I had worked myself out of my union job. My business was failing, and I was drinking in bed anytime I was alone. The last time she left to go take care of her grandmother who's dying, I couldn't face that bed again. I didn't know what to do. I've been trying to quit drinking for off and on for years. It got harder and harder and harder. And when she left to the airport, I realized that I didn't think I could stop. I always thought I could stop before. No matter how hard it was, I kept trying, and this time I didn't know how to do it. So I went to my first meeting. The guy in my union had been offering to take me for months, and I kept on saying, I got this. You know, it's not a big deal. And I finally went to the meeting. You know, it was the first time I had been sober during the day, because I was morning drinking by then. And I went to that first meeting, Tuesday night at 6:30, over at Central Office. And I raised my hand and said I was an alcoholic. And I haven't had a drink since. And it's been a pretty awesome ride. I see two people I saw my first week of sobriety, just Brad and Becca. And they both greeted me like they're old friends from almost a different life. And my life has changed a lot. I did it the hard way. I didn't get a sponsor early on. My first sponsor I fought with constantly. I had to have outside influences kind of make me surrender. I had a fire in the warehouse. My business was to kill two people. And that was the first time I called my sponsor. Really called my sponsor. I didn't know what to do. I called him at 5:30 in the morning, and I went to a meeting. I had another one where I got in a motorcycle accident. This is all about the different steps. I was having an issue turning it over after that too, because I do like to control stuff. Got hit by a car. Hand was facing the wrong way, broken ribs. I was in the back of the ambulance. I was still trying to control stuff. I was telling the cops not to tow the bike. I was trying to direct everything. And I realized I had this moment of clarity, which I've had a few times in my life. And I actually let go. It was like this physical release. And I allowed them to do their thing. I carried that into the program. I started working the steps after that. I changed sponsors. My whole life sort of changed after that, but I needed that outside pressure to teach me how to turn it over. And now my life is pretty awesome. I still do 7 meetings a week, which that's what I did when I was sober. I started the 90 and 90 and just kept doing it. I've got 3 commitments, which are awesome. If you're new, if you don't have a commitment, it's the best thing I've done. Second best thing, I've got a commitment at this meeting. I remember being at this meeting 5 years ago. You have to raise your hand under 90 days. I remember raising it every week and just so excited when I got to 90 days because I was so uncomfortable I didn't want to raise my hand. And I have a commitment at this meeting, which is awesome. The first meeting I got sober at, I have a commitment there. And I've got sponsees. I've got down to 1 sponsee, but that's the other thing that really changed my program too, is daily contact with other alcoholics. So I'm in contact with sober alcoholics every day, but I also reach out to my sponsees and other people in the program. And my life is awesome. Every day I wake up. As an atheist, I still pray. In the morning, I do reading. I work with my sponsors to get a morning program, too, because that helps me. It gets me right every day, so I wake up on the wrong side of the bed. I don't go too off the rails. I run the apprenticeship program in my union. It was the same job that I couldn't function at anymore. I never drank there, but I had so much resentments there, I couldn't face to go to work there. And now I run the apprenticeship program with 150 apprentices. I don't like meeting new people. I'm not that good of a leader, and now I'm a leader. I'm in daily contact with 150 people and I'm training to do this trade. I deal with the other 600 people in my union for training. It's something that, it's not showing up, it's not me. It's not the person I was. And through the last 5 years, I'm kind of discovering that person that I was a long time ago, the person I could have been. Without the mental illness, without the alcoholism. And so far, it's been a great ride. And the fact that I'm up here, I can talk at a semi-normal pace. And when Chelsea asked, I immediately said yes, is a miracle. So thanks a lot.
Hi, I'm Ashley. I'm an alcoholic.
Ashley.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Hi. All right, so I go to 8:55. Okay. Great. It's really good to be here. It'll be better when it's over. I'm going to try to share my experience, strength, and hope, and we'll see what happens. My sobriety date is September the 12th of 2011. That's a little over 7 years. It is not my first sobriety date. Who knows if it'll be my last. Hopefully it will be. And I was trying to think of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And well, first of all, thanks for the 10-minute share wherever he went. Oh, there you are. That was awesome. I related to everything that you said. I didn't make it quite as long as you drinking, but I related to all of it. And like you, before I even started drinking and using, I wanted to change how I felt. I remember when I was really young, I got into this thing that I don't know how we ended up starting to do it, but it was we called it fainting, where you basically have someone just hold your veins on your neck up against the wall until you literally faint. I loved it. You blacked out for like a minute or two, and you woke up, and my whole body was just kind of pulsing, and it was great. And I tried to do it all the time. I tried to do it to myself. It didn't work. I would let go before I fainted. I just loved getting out of myself. I needed to get out of the here and now. Reality was so fucking uncomfortable for me. So uncomfortable. I hated it. The restless, irritable, and discontent. And eventually some non-alcoholic friend of mine told their parents that we were doing this thing and ended up stopping the whole thing. So it was ended badly. They were like, you could die. And I was like, I don't care, you know? And I guess the other, the thing that's kind of important about my childhood, because I won't talk about that, is that I was just, like I mentioned, so uncomfortable. I had so much social anxiety, especially, and social interactions between people. It was just so hard for me. I don't know why, but I just couldn't understand how people did this thing and how people interacted with each other and how people talked one-on-one, especially. That was the hardest, one-on-one interactions. There was no buffer. There was nothing. And the only thing that really made me feel better was when I was younger was things like fainting, getting out of myself physically, passing out. Or I did sports and I liked doing it and I was really good at it. And I could get out of my head for an hour or whatever it was. And so that's really what I focused on, was doing that, sports. I didn't have to talk to people, like the normal interactions, I could just whatever. And so that became the focus. It's actually the only thing, probably next to drugs and alcohol and sobriety, that have made me feel like the most okay with myself. And when I was 15, I started drinking and using. Like, being a really socially anxious person, I wasn't like the cool kid. I wasn't invited to parties or all that stuff. So I got it when I could, and I was 15, and I still remember that first time drinking. For many years, I told the story of my first drink, which was a lie. I think when I first got sober, I wanted it to be more dramatic than it was. I was very dramatic, and I wanted it to be, so like the second time I drank was very dramatic and there was a lot of consequences and whatnot. So I made that my first drink, but I was recently reading my journals, and I ended up reading them and burning them. That was also dramatic. That was a couple years ago. But I realized that my first drink wasn't that. It was another time. I flipped them. But anyway, equally, it just tells you that if I tell myself a lie long enough, I will start to believe it. I really do. And I've done that my whole life. But I remember, like you said, I remember distinctly my first drink. And I remember how it felt. I was at a sleepover with some teammates, and their parents said, we're going to go out to dinner for back in a couple hours. I said, why don't we drink while they're gone? And we ended up selecting Tanqueray gin and creme de menthe and mixing those together. And I remember it was horrible, but at the same time, like, I remember feeling it, you know, go down my throat and down, and it just radiated throughout me. And I just remember, like, the fear that I had and held on to my whole life just kind of evaporated off my skin, and it was just fucking magical. And I was like, all of a sudden, that anxiety, that fear was just gone, and I was just happy, and I was, could do what I was doing with the people I was doing it with, and I was fine. And I wanted to do that as much as I possibly could, and I ended up, like, calling two girls that were seniors on the team and having them come over, and I remember just being funny and entertaining, and it was just, that was it. I was like, this is it. This is the solution. This is it. This is what I want to do. And that, you know, a couple weeks later, the whole dramatic thing happened, the alcohol poisoning and the puking and the blacking out. Anyway, but that first year, I started drinking and using a lot, as much as I could, I started, then smoking weed and then taking pills. And in a very short period of time, like, things changed a lot for me. And it was, like, that year is, like, I started. I ended up going to a therapist that year. I remember going to my first psychiatrist that year. I was on psych meds that year. You know, my grades started tanking. I quit one of my sports teams, and I started, having sex. I started, getting in fights. Like, it was just, like, my whole personality was just, like, boom, and it flipped over. And I just did that as much as possible, because that was the solution. Even though it was causing these problems, it was, like, I always said, like, you know, like, if you're going to go, like, if you go on a day trip to the beach, you know you're going to get, you know, you're going to get sandy. Like, you're going to get sand in your shoes and in your clothes and in your car and, like, shit like that. But it's worth it because you go to the beach, right? And, like, it's beautiful and it's spiritual, it's powerful, it's fun, and you expect the sand. Like, everything, all the consequences for me were just sand. It was just, like, I didn't care about all this shit. It was just a means, like, it was just a thing that happened, but I get to do this other thing. And I get to feel okay in the world, and that's all I wanted. And I was 17. I moved up to from San Diego is where I was raised, and I moved up to Berkeley. And I truly felt like I had arrived here. I decided to leave this socially anxious, nerdy thing down south in San Diego, and I was going to reinvent myself. I was going to be this party girl. I was, say yes to everything. I was adventurous and exciting and all these things, and I tried to do that, and that worked for a little bit. And I remember alcohol, that was like when it was working for me. And then you talk about like it working for us for a while, especially when at the beginning it does what it's supposed to do. And and that lasted for a couple years. I was able to get off my psych meds because alcohol and drugs were my solution. And I started doing other things, and I found cocaine, I found amphetamines, I found, the Adderall and the hallucinogens, and I started the benzos. I started mixing everything together and doing all these things that made me feel okay in my skin. That's all I really fucking wanted. What happened though, was a really quick decline over the next 4 years of being up here, in Berkeley and, doing what I wanted to do. It was a quick decline into like psychosis basically. And, all the drugs I was doing and all the, whatever, all the booze I was drinking, and combined with my anxieties that started to come back. I was mortified when they started coming back while I was drinking and using. And it was like, wait, what? This is the solution. And they started, I would be so drunk and I couldn't drink away that fear. I would be having panic attacks while I was drinking, which was unheard of. And then I started like losing my mind, and I was, I had this, I don't know why, I like to scale buildings, go on top of buildings when I was drunk at night, and I would climb the sides of buildings and be up on the roof. I didn't want them to get me, so like on the roof you kind of have a good vantage point. And I would get up there with like a knife and a lot of cocaine. If I fell asleep, they would get me, so you had to keep doing the coke, which made it worse. And I started seeing people that weren't there, and I could see ghosts. I thought I was a medium. I could see ghosts. I also thought that I had, I could see into the future, but my power, I could only see into the future 3 seconds, which is not that hard, actually, to do. But I thought I was really powerful, and just my brain just, I couldn't handle, like, reality. They talk about in the book, you separate the, you can't separate the true from the false as an alcoholic, and your alcoholic life becomes the only normal one. And I just was okay with this. It was just like the sand. I remember one time going into the bookstore at UC Berkeley and going to the metaphysics section, and I stuffed my backpack with like a bunch of like time travel books and like wormholes and, you know, like theories of relativity, and I like stole them all because if I had paid for them, not that I had money, but they would like know that I knew too much, and like I was just insane, and I couldn't keep it together, and hiding from people with cell phones, which is really hard to do because I thought they were the feds and stuff like that, and really like it became clear to other people, I should say, that I was an alcoholic because I was in heavy denial about what was going on, and like to a reasonable person, what I was doing, the behaviors I was I don't know what the word is, whatever, and all led like to like alcoholism. Like other people saw it. They've been confronting me with my drinking for a long time, and but I have this like heavy layer of denial that I can put over anything in my life, and I can still do it. To a much less degree now, but, like, it was very, oh, yeah, so, like, for example, to give you an example of how much in denial I can be, I had been sleeping with and in long-term relationships with women for 4 years before I realized I was gay. That is hard to do. That's hard to do, but I did it. I really didn't know. And that's what it was like for drinking and using. Like, I just didn't know, and I was the last to know. But it was obvious, and I didn't know what an alcoholic was. That's the other thing. I didn't grow up around alcoholics or alcoholism, and I grew up around a lot of dysfunction, but I didn't know. And so, like, I didn't know. I had this image in my mind, and that wasn't what I was. And come to find out in the rooms here, like, alcoholism is like this three-part thing, right? It's like this physical allergy, and I didn't understand when I first heard that what allergy meant. I know I just say to people that I'm like sponsoring or whatever, it's just like an abnormal reaction. So I have this physical abnormal reaction where when I start drinking, I want more, period, or using anything mind-altering. And I want more, and I can't stop. Something physically has to intervene with me. Usually me passing out. I like to, at like a house party, I like to lock myself in the only bathroom of the house and then pass out on the floor, like with the locked door. And I like had to physically be separated from alcohol or drugs to stop doing them. And the second part of the alcoholism, which I didn't know about, is like this mental obsession. And like, so basically all I think about and all I want to do is thinking about the next drink, how I'm going to get it, where it's going to be, who is it going to be with, what is it going to be, what do I have to do between now and then, like, or, you know, actually, you know, taking it. And what happens is even if I stop drinking for a period of time, my mind will convince me to start doing it again. And every reason that I had, and it talks about this extensively in the big book, every reason that I had becomes like foggy and hazy, and I can't quite grasp it like I did, you know, the morning after whatever that happened. Like, that was so clear then, and now I can't quite grasp onto it, and all the reasons why I shouldn't go away, and I'm obsessed, and I start drinking again, and I start taking a drink that I can't stop taking, and it's this fucking cycle. It's this very vicious cycle. And then the third part is this spiritual malady, and I definitely related to that. That's harder to define, but it's for me it was like a vast emptiness, a vast feeling of disconnectedness from everybody and everything. I definitely have been suicidal. I had been for most of my life, or since I was 15, I skipped that too. I had like a vague suicide attempt. And through my drinking and even into sobriety, this like existential discontent with life in the world. And no matter how many people were surrounding me, no matter who was around, it was like I just felt empty. And I So I definitely, when I came to AA and I heard about these things, like, I identified immediately. And I'm not one of those people that go back and forth whether they're an alcoholic or not. I know exactly that I'm an alcoholic. I relate to everything in the Big Book and what all you say. When I first got sober, it was more like, do I care enough about myself to do something about it? Not whether or not I'm an alcoholic. What happened? Let's see. So there was a lot of I had like a sports team again. I had I lived in a house with 8 other girls. I was like 21 years old, and I had like a coach, and people were around me. So like I wasn't alone. So people could see what was happening to me and wanted me to get help. I had a lot of public displays of alcoholism that were unavoidable, really, that I wanted to just go into a dark hole and disappear forever and not think about. The only way to do that was to do something even crazier the next day or week or whatever. So people started putting pressure. Like you said, there was outside pressures on me, and they made me, like, choose between going to this support group at the university. It was like I could go to the harm reduction group or the abstinence group. And I was like, harm reduction sounds great. Thank you. And I could still drink. And I started going to that group, and I remember it was led by like a social worker and like a therapist and some other people, public health, I don't know. But we had this group. It was like maybe 10 or 15 people every week. And it was not AA. And so one time I would go, and I was just like a disaster. People were like mortified. The reaction to like the things that I thought were normal was like mortification on other people's face. But one time they had these laminated words, like on the floor, like they had printed out a bunch of things. They were all like adjectives, feeling words, and things like that, descriptors. And we did this like exercise where they would say like, how do you feel when like you're at a party, or how do you feel the next morning after whatever? And the first thing whatever they asked, I remember looking around trying to vaguely participate, and I saw the word cursed, and I just picked up the word cursed, and everybody, like, after every time, would put their word back and, like, pick another word to describe it. Every single time, I just picked up cursed, and I really felt that way. That's how my life felt, and it's funny now, but thanks, Nikki. But I felt cursed, and I felt cursed because I couldn't, like, now that, like when I was drinking, it was fucked. Like, things were so chaotic. I couldn't control what would happen. I would humiliate myself. I would embarrass others around me. I would hurt people around me. Like, and then I couldn't, when I was sober, And that was awful, you know? And I was irritable, discontent, restless. I was crawling out of my skin. And so I really felt, and what I didn't, that talks about too later, like, it talks about the jumping off place where you can't imagine your life with alcohol and you can't imagine your life without alcohol. And that's where I kind of was, and I didn't know what to do about it. I didn't know about the program. I didn't know anything, and I just was in this place of feeling cursed, and that's kind of what happened. So let's see. This part, what happened, is very fuzzy for me. Like, I don't exactly remember, but I remember that this girl on my team a couple years back had taken a semester off, and she went to rehab, and then she came back, and she was no fun anymore, and she did not party with me anymore, and she had gotten sober, and she started going to meetings in the area here, and so she was the roommate of my girlfriend. They lived in the same apartment, and so she saw a lot of this up close and personal of what I was going through, what I was doing. And she started talking to me about AA. And it was very fuzzy. Like, I don't really remember it. And for the life of me, I do not know why I agreed to go to an AA meeting with her. I cannot imagine what I was thinking to agree to do that. Because I was also very, I was a devout atheist as well. I thought that God, I thought AA, I thought all this stuff was just crap. But for some reason, I don't know what it was, but I agreed to go to a meeting, and I remember going with her to this meeting. It was Sunday night. It was Mandana House. It was 8 o'clock. It was February of 2009, and we were a couple minutes late, and it was raining. That's all I remember. Oh, and the topic was God. And there was a blonde woman talking in the front, and she was so cheerful and happy, and her topic was literally God. It was, like, the worst topic for, like, me. I was just like, oh, my, like, what is this? And I had also been up the whole night before on speed. I remember just sitting, we were late. The only seat was in this piano bench, and I was just, like, gripping the bottom of the piano bench and just, like, oh, my God. Just couldn't wait to get out of there. But I started, again, I don't know why, but something about it, I just started going to a couple meetings. And this part is very hard to remember, but I do remember that all, you know how they talk about fun with problems and then just problems? I remember that most of the time there was a lot of consequences and it was dramatic and, you know, tragic and all these things, embarrassing, but there was still some fun parts. And I remember, like, I would hold on to these small little moments and decide that that's what made all of this worth it, you know? And after I started coming to meetings, that was gone. It would ruin every bit of drinking and using that I had. From then on out, it was just for oblivion. All it was drinking and using for oblivion. There was no more of that it talks about, like, reclaiming the moments of the past in the book. The joy, that freedom, that all that was gone. And so the next couple months, going to AA, I also had this horrible awakening that I couldn't stop drinking and using. I always thought that if I'd wanted to stop, I could, but I never wanted to. So when I was starting to try to do it and I couldn't, it was more baffling than anything else. And then I started getting mad about it. And after a couple months of doing that, I remember one night, it was April 22nd of 2009, and for a while now, my roommates and people stopped offering me drugs or alcohol. They hid it from me, you know, because we were in this house and they were trying to be respectful. But I remember hearing them say that there was these leftover pot cookies from 420. Mind you, it's the 22nd, so they literally couldn't finish it. I was like flabbergasted that they had leftover cookies for 2 fucking days that they didn't somehow consume between 8 people. But anyway, I heard that and my brain just was like ding. And I've been sober for a couple days, and as soon as they all left, I went and stole one and I ate it. And I remember calling my friend, my person that brought me to my first meeting, and I asked her if it counted, like, as a relapse or not. And I was like, she's like, yes. I was like, no, I didn't even smoke it, though. I just, like, ate the cookie. And she's like, yes, that counts. And I was like, well, okay. I hung up. I was like, fuck it. And I went to the store and got a 12-pack of Pacifico. And that night ended in a 5-point restraint after I valiantly tried to fight a couple EMTs and firefighters that had just broken down my door because I had taken, like, handfuls, like, 5. I was on 5 psych meds at the time. I took them all, a bottle of Tylenol PM, the 12 Pacificos, and laid down and wanted it to just, I didn't want to necessarily commit suicide. I just wanted it to be over. Like, I wanted this to just end. I was in so much distress, and I just wanted it to be over. They at the hospital, they kept saying I wanted to kill myself. I was, disagreeing with them the whole time, but I just wanted it to go away. And if I died, I died. And so I went to the psych ward, well, the ER or the ICU for a while, and then the psych ward for 5 days. And I got out of there, and they gave you on a bunch of pills when you're there, so I didn't go through any withdrawal. But I got out of there on a Monday, late Monday night. Went to bed. While I was in the psych ward, I had gotten a sponsor, and she, I didn't know it was the counselor at Thunder Road, a rehab just here in an adolescent rehab, she was like, had this little intervention kind of with, and my, I think my mom was there, my girlfriend was there, a friend, my like sponsor, and a couple people, and they all had this thing, and they were like decided for me that I was going to go to rehab. So I had to go to rehab on a Friday, and I got out on a Monday, went to bed, woke up on Tuesday, and I was like, all right, all I have to do is make it till Friday, and I'm going to go to rehab, and you know, whatever. And by Wednesday afternoon, I was using again. I couldn't fucking do it. I couldn't handle it. I couldn't. It was just, reality is just, the curse of the alcoholic, it cannot stand sobriety after a certain amount of time. And at that time, I could not stand sobriety. And so I go into rehab, and something changed. I know people talk about it being like a $10,000 big book or whatever. And to an extent, that's true. Like, just on its own, it won't do much except keep you in another place for 20, you know, however many days. But for me to be physically separated from it and kind of take me out of that environment that I was in, it and give me enough time for, like, the like, rational part of my brain to come back, it helped. And at some point during that time, all these people that have been trying to get me to get sober and all that, there was this guy, he was this old dude, he was like in his 70s, late 70s, and I just would fuck off in rehab, like I was like drawing on tattoos on myself, and I had this little Coast Guard chick, heroin addict friend, and we were just like vandalizing shit and like making fun of the counselors and trying to undermine everything. And one day in group, he was like, he told me, he was like, he looked straight at me and he's like, the first time I got sober, I was your age and I would do anything to get the last 50 years of my life back. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I've been in and out for 50 years and he was in there and something about that just like washed over me. And I was like, holy shit, like this is not a joke. And this is a fatal progressive disease. And, I started taking it seriously and I started doing the things that were suggested of me. And it, from then on, till now, I've been doing this deal. And that was 10 years ago, and I'll get to my relapse in a second. But then what happened as an alcoholic for me is that things got a lot worse before they got better. I was taking my coping mechanism, my solution, right? The problem isn't drugs and alcohol. The problem is that my solution is drugs and alcohol. That was my experience. As soon as that went away, I had no solution. I had no tools for living. It was right back to being 15 and like my social anxiety just like ramped up. I didn't know how to live. It was just horrible. While I was in rehab, it was like May to mid-June of, while I was there, all the people in my house, because 4 years is, I guess, a normal amount of time for people to go to college, they all graduated and moved away. My girlfriend I had was not sober, so I broke up with her. I had nobody, basically no friends, no girlfriend, no place to live. I was just like thrown into the world. I had no idea how to do it. And my first sober living house, I went to this place. It was like down on Dwight. It was this sober living place that doesn't exist anymore for reasons that will become clear. But basically, we were just like a madhouse. And then one night, there's like these eviction notices on the door that the manager and the owner kept taking down, and they kept putting them back up. And they were like, oh, don't worry about it. And one night they were like, had a house, emergency house meeting. And they were like, so you have 24 hours to vacate the premises. We're all evicted. Like, basically, I, you know, haven't been paying the mortgage. And the rumor was that he's been using this whole time, this sober guy had been directing, and he'd been using all of our money that we were paying him. And we had to leave. He's like, the sheriff will be here in 24 hours. And we were all... And then he left. The manager stayed there in the house with us, and he left. He was out. He was still sober, I think. But and that night was a party, let me tell you. Someone found speakers. alcohol. There was like, it was like a fucking chaos. And someone, the guy that had been, like, got his meth pipe out. And I remember sitting on the bed, and it was me, him, this my roommate, and this other chick. And they started smoking it, and they tried to pass it to me, and I passed it the other way just to buy myself a little bit of time. And it went around and went around and went around. And, like, by the time it was here, like, it was, like, the decision. It was, like, I remember feeling, like, this is, like, life or death. Like, this is it. Like, this is what I need to do. And I just remember yelling at them to get out. And I've made, like, the first honest decision, like, first decision to for sobriety for myself that night. Made him get out. Everyone basically relapsed that night. I locked myself in my room. And then the next morning, I moved into my car. And I lived in my car. And went to AA that summer, and then I was like on, and I was like, this is like what I want, you know, this is the thing. And it was a mess, and I was really sick, and it was horrible in a lot of ways, but somehow I believed you guys when you said that, like, it's gonna get better, and if you keep doing this thing, things will change and things will get better. And I wanted what you had, and I started doing the things that you did to get it, and things started changing again. Like, the things I did in early sobriety, like, in early sobriety, I would say, is a loose term, like, probably like 3 or 4 years were just really cringeworthy, and I hate looking back at some of those things. But, like, I kept coming back, and I kept doing the thing, and I got a sponsor, and started doing the steps to the best of my ability, which was not what I can do now. I can say that for sure. And I just started taking suggestions from other people, which was huge. And I never had done that before. And I started taking contrary action. And like doing what I'm doing right now, contrary action, doing the things I don't want to do that I know to be good for me or that other people tell me are good for me, you know? And at 2.5 years, I had gotten into this really bad motorcycle accident, and I was in the hospital with a ruptured spleen, and they had put me on morphine. I was on my way to the International Conference of Young People in AA in San Francisco with my buddy who was sober, and we got in a motorcycle accident, and we were in the hospital, and I got put on this morphine drip. I was in there for like 4 days or something, and they put me on the drip because I couldn't stop moving long enough for them to take a scan. And then what happened was I got out, and they gave me some pills, Norcos or something like that, some painkiller. And it was already in my system, and I had no defense against that drink. And that first day I was out, I had this whole schedule planned out of like when I was going to take the anti-inflammatory, when I was going to take this thing, when I was going to take this thing and the antibiotics, and I had a schedule and I was like going to stick to it. And like, I took one pill, and then I was like, well, if I take this one now, two now, I'll skip the next one. And then I was like, well, if I take three now, I won't take any until I go to bed. And then like, and then all of a sudden, like, the reasons for drinking, and like, I just couldn't, I didn't have any defense against it. And I just took way, way more than prescribed. And I know now that I just didn't take the first step fucking seriously as I should, which was that I'm powerless over drugs and alcohol. I thought that making a schedule was gonna like keep me from overusing the drugs, and I ended up changing my sobriety day. That's the only thing that happened. That was one of the hardest decisions. Another decision of my sobriety was that next day when I was on day zero, and part of me was saying, well, fuck it. You had 2.5 years of sobriety. Sobriety was the most important thing in my life at this point. I went to 10 meetings a week. I had commitments everywhere. I was sponsoring 2 people, and it was just like gone, right? My sobriety was gone. It was going to be so easy for me to just pick up, like, at least for one day, get loaded like I wanted to, you know? And I didn't. That really taught me, and that was September 12th or 11th, and then, so my sobriety day is now September 12th of 2011, and that really taught me the meaning of one day at a time, because I hadn't really quite grasped it before, and it was like, this day is the day we make a decision not to drink. It's not tomorrow, And like, it seems simple, but like, that has carried on with me until now, that like, this is literally a one day at a time program, and it's very simple. It's not easy, but it's very simple. And things like that over time that I said at the beginning and I heard people say have started to make sense over the last, you know, several years. And now, like, now things are 180 degrees different from when I came in. Like, I literally felt cursed, and I hated myself deeply. I hated everybody else. I hated this world and living in it. And to a point now where I am at ease with myself, that I can allow people to love me and love other people, that I can do things that are good for me even though I don't want to do them, and like, be an adult about things. I'm definitely like a runner. I will avoid and run away from everything. The three big ones were like, responsibility, accountability, vulnerability. Those were like no-nos. And now, like, I can do that. I can have a job. I used to just, I could get jobs really easily, and then as soon as they asked me to do things like show up on time, it was like, oh, okay, I'm going to have to go to the, you know, move along. You know, things, and I've just grown up a lot. I've grown up in these rooms, and I've grown up watching all of you do what you do and doing what you do sober, and I found, like, this, like, freedom. And I remember someone telling me one time, like, because my whole life had been about instant gratification, and it was like, I want what I want when I want it, and what I want it is now. And just go jump. It was like a long string of instant gratifications. My life was. And I remember someone saying one time, like, why settle for relief when what you seek is freedom? And I was like, and this is what I found here. Like, that was relief. And drinking and using was relief. That had no actual substance behind it. But here, this program, the steps, the higher power, the fellowship, and the recovery ultimately is actually freedom. And it has depth and weight, like it talks about. It has like a backbone. It has, you can rely on it, and it's real. And it's not this fleeting sense of instant gratification that I used to seek well into sobriety with other, you know, I can use anything. I can be addicted to anything. And so, yeah, I guess, I'll just close with, thank you for, you know, for keeping me sober, because I constantly find that I can't do something, but, like, we can, like, I couldn't stay sober on my own, but I found, like, once I got to you guys, like, somehow, and I don't understand it, I don't know how the steps work, I just know that doing them brings about amazing results, and so I just keep doing them. And the more I try to complicate it, the more fucked up it gets. Mm-hmm. I just try to keep it like it was when I first started and try to listen to suggestions, and I found, like, this wonderful life. So thank you.